trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome to the show. Now, if this is your first time aboard, I want you to know I'm going to be gentle with you. I'm not here to beat you into submission with my opinions, but I am definitely going to offer some opinions that I promise you will likely push you out of your comfort zone. Now, there's no expectation that you have to agree with these. I'm merely asking you, please consider them. Do with them as you will. If it makes sense, you know, after you've had a chance to digest it and think about it, if it makes sense, then yeah, by all means, you know, adapt the information into your own thinking. But this is not about you have to think a certain way. This is merely encouraging you to consider that there might be some different perspectives or a different vantage point that would offer a more complete view of the situation. And as always, my goal is to bring these facts into the light without adding more anger or more fear to the situation, because we've got plenty of that to go around. Got some great sponsors who make this show possible as well. They include LifesavingFood.com, HSLAmmo.com, SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, MonticelloCollege.org, GovernYourIncome.com, and the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George, Utah. So I've got some fairly heavy topics to drop on you in this hour. Probably the heaviest one is an article by Brandon Smith with the lowdown on how the Fed has triggered a stagnationary disaster that will hit hard this year. And again, my goal here is not to get you in panic mode or to convince you, you know, it's all hopeless. These are just hard facts that really need to be faced. And there's still time, you know, for you and I to take steps to improve our position, but we're all going to get our feet wet. Okay, there's really no way to avoid this. Now, something I make a very concerted effort to do is to avoid politics wherever possible. I'm of the opinion that politics tends to poison everything that it touches, and if you can think of any issues that haven't been politicized, that haven't become a power struggle, you know, I'm anxious to hear about them. But to my thinking, pretty much everything that politics touches turns into a big power struggle. Well, Charles Hugh Smith says politics is dead. And by politics, he's talking democracy, representational democracy. And here's his explanation as to what killed it. He says, here's politics in America now. Come with Mega Millions or don't even bother to show up. He says representational democracy, a.k.a. politics, as a solution to social and economic problems, has passed away. It did not die a natural death. Politics developed a cancer very early in life, circa the early 1800s, caused by wealth outweighing public opinion. The cancer spread slowly but metastasized in the past few decades, spreading to every nook and cranny of our society and economy as democracy devolved into an invitation-only auction of elections and political favors. I mean, so far, I think he's batting 1,000 here. He says politics might have had a fighting chance, but three forces destroyed the nation, or betrayed the nation, rather, and its citizenry. Number one, the Federal Reserve transferred trillions of dollars of unearned wealth into the feeding troughs of the super wealthy and corporations, vastly increasing the wealth the top 0.01% had to buy elections and favors. The Federal Reserve cloaked its treachery with jargon, quantitative easing, stimulus, etc., and then stabbed the nation's representational democracy in the back. The Supreme Court betrayed the nation's representative democracy, that's the second point, by labeling corporations buying elections and political favors a form of free speech. Now he says, please don't hurt yourself laughing too hard. The Supreme Court's equating wealth buying elections and favors with individual citizens' sacrosanct right of free speech was a knife in the back of the nation and its citizenry. Number three, the two political parties betrayed their traditional voter bases to kneel at the altar of corporate elite wealth, wealth which bought elections and political favors. The Democrats, traditional champions of the workforce in the 20th century, abandoned workers in favor of serving their corporate masters, masking their betrayal with fine-sounding phrases. The Republican Party, traditionally promoters of big business, Wall Street, banks, megacorporations, had maintained a narrow but crucial interest in trust-busting, limiting monopolies to defend free enterprise and small business from the predations of monopolies and cartels. Well, those days are long past. Just as the Democratic Party tossed the working class overboard to the sharks, the Republican Party walked small businesses right off the gangplank into the voracious jaws of cartels and globalized, financialized corporate sharks. Now, to cloak their betrayal and treachery, he says the parties have pursued a divide-and-conquer distraction game, pushing half the nation into one-size-fits-all enemies lists with labels that have lost all meaning other than as means to promote divisiveness and rancor. Liberal and conservative, socialist and capitalist, etc. It's not the citizenry who are deplorable. It's the party's corporate derriere-kissing toadies, lackeys, apparatchiks, purveyors of propaganda, enforcers, apologists, sycophants, grifters, and leaders who manage to greatly increase their private wealth while serving the public. That's in quotes, of course. Charles Hugh Smith says, these three betrayals of public trust and representational democracy caused the demise of politics as a solution to social and economic problems. Politics has been stripped to its essence, an invitation-only auction of elections and political favors. The price to watch from the rear of the auction is $1 million. To actually place a bid, the minimum is $10 million. But the winning bids are generally much higher. Lobbying, campaign contributions, bogus think tanks, and philanthrocapitalist foundations are all part of the auction funding. So here's politics in America now. Come with mega millions or don't even bother to show up. Choose which enemies list you want to be on. There's not much choice. Oh, and don't forget to put a flower on the grave of representational democracy. I mean, I've looked this over and I've tried to think, okay, where is he getting this wrong? I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's missing the point at all here. I think he's actually right on the money. So I'll link to this article in the show notes. I would encourage you check it out for yourself. Now, I'm not trying to tell you that you shouldn't be involved in politics at any level. I know people who are, answering what they feel is a call to stand up and actually run for office, to be the person who makes the difference. But I have yet to talk to a single person who's actually thrown their name in the hat, or thrown their hat in the ring, whatever the metaphor is here, who hasn't come away a little bit educated and a little bit disillusioned at the same time with what is required to succeed in politics. I think about James Altucher, who several years ago decided he was going to do a run for Congress. And I haven't seen much from Altucher lately, so I don't know what he's up to these days. Very gifted writer, very good motivational, individual. But when he decided, I'm going to run for Congress, he was feeling very enthusiastic about his prospects of making a difference. I mean, it was Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of stuff. But he quickly ran headlong into the reality that as a candidate, he could not be perfectly honest. In fact, one of the first things he talks about was he sat down with some of the party, heads who were ready to consider him and looking at him as whether or not he was going to be a serious candidate. And the very first thing they asked him is, show us on paper, where are you going to get the money to make this run? We want you to show us, where's the funding going to come from? Work it out for us right here on paper. How are you going to come up with enough money to actually fund your campaign? So the idea that wealth is being used to drive those political favors and positions, that's not a wrong assertion. It's true. But he says the more chilling thing was they said, and we have some other concerns too. Among those other concerns that these party apparatchiks had was that you can't be honest on this issue, or on this issue, you can't say what you really think. And the conclusion that James Altucher came to was, I really can't be myself. I can't be authentic and expect to go anywhere in politics. I mean, if you think about it in those terms, suddenly it doesn't look like quite the noble, well, I'm just engaged in public service, and yes, I will take all the adulation you can give me. Instead, it starts looking like something very different, very amoral, in which politicians will say whatever they need to say in order to get elected, and then once they're in power, they have a tendency to do whatever they have to do, no matter how shady, no matter how sleazy, in order to keep the money flowing that will keep them in power. Now, I know there may be some exceptions to the rule here. And there may be some people who sincerely are, you know, making a good effort. I look at Rand Paul calling out Dr. Fauci and I think, yep, I'm glad he's where he is. But generally, politics is a corrupting force. The more problems we can solve without it, the better off we're going to be. But we got to get in the habit of solving our own problems first. Maybe we should work on that.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Thank you so much for being part of our growing audience of wrong thinkers. This program is made possible by my sponsors. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there was a time when I was teetering out there on my toddler legs and just getting things going that I would ask my listeners to please consider becoming a regular monthly supporter of the program. You still have that option, but I don't ask for it. And the reason I don't ask for it is because I have great sponsors who help to make it possible. They keep the wolves away from my door so that I can spend my time finding the best guests, the best information that I can then share with you. Among those sponsors, the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George. Now, if you or someone you know anywhere in the state of Utah is looking for a home or a home loan, I should say, if you're looking for a VA loan, a traditional loan, a reverse mortgage, maybe you just want to refinance your existing mortgage, please consider talking to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George. I make it real easy to get in touch with her. There's a link directly to her email in my show notes. You can also call 435-703-4522. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. And Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. Let her know that her advertising message reached your ears through this program. So I know a lot of us feel pretty good about being part of the resistance. I know I do. I find purpose in thinking, you know what? Sometimes it's uncomfortable and it's sometimes not that pleasant when people are very openly disapproving or disagreeing with you. But it feels good to stand for something. And I know that there are a lot of people who categorize themselves as the resistance. Well, I'm part of the resistance. Look at me. I'm resisting. Saw a very interesting article from Matt Rowe. This is on AmericanThinker.com. So you think you are resisting. And he draws a very interesting line here. And I don't disagree with him on this. But if you are not paying a price in some way, you might just be virtue signaling instead. Matt Rose says, I've seen a lot of reader comments lately in various media on government COVID mandates where commenters attack the victims in the story. For example, here's a January 15th Daily Wire article. New York restaurateur blasts Democratic senator's arrogance for flouting mask mandate. Thinks she's above the law. The story's about how U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is a hypocrite with respect to the state's COVID-19 mask mandate because she entered a restaurant without wearing a mask. Now, in this case, Matt Rose says, look, I agree with the point of the story. However, one reader commented on being turned away at a local restaurant for not wearing a mask as mandated by government authorities. The diner told the person at the door that he would just take his business elsewhere from then on, to which the host suggested that he just play the game and wear a mask. Many other commenters were outraged by the play the game comment. Most suggested or affirmed the decision never to patronize that establishment again and tell all your friends about it, too. Now, they responded as if the restaurant owner were some sort of collaborator, and many comparisons were made to the rise of the Nazis in Germany. Nonetheless, he says there is a significant difference here that matters regarding collaboration, an important point which I'll return to shortly. He says one writer scolded me for defending the restaurant owner and for pointing out that the establishment could be shut down, which would create problems for the restaurateur and his employees. After all, they have bills to pay and families to feed. But he says, I suggested that these writers fight as not with this person, but instead with the government, and that they should pick their battles more appropriately. He says, I added that they should vote, write articles, and protest. I added, as I usually do, that it's easy to call for risky action by someone else at no risk to yourself. Then I was lectured by another commentator, or another commenter rather, about how one toothpick is easy to break and how a bunch of toothpicks are harder to break, a classic and very easy to understand analogy. I explained that randomly placed toothpicks are not hard to break, and that properly organized and aligned toothpicks are called for. Why would the restaurateur risk anything for someone who just randomly walks in? Who's going to provide him and his employees with what they need to survive? Who would risk punishment by sneaking into his closed-down place at night to buy a meal? Who would hire his waiters and cooks? Why should he bear the risk for change when so many others do not? Well, the essence of political resistance is that it must be organized and focused. It calls for leaders who can identify government weaknesses and find ways to exploit them. It requires funding and discipline. Until you have all that, you do not have a resistance. You have dissatisfaction. Once a genuine resistance is in place, we can discuss collaboration. A collaborator is someone who has something to gain by working with the oppressor. A collaborator is not someone who has everything to lose with no hope of support from the other dissatisfied members of the community. So meaningful resistance takes courage, and all those calling for resistance must be willing to risk something too, rather than just ask someone else to resist. Furthermore, those in the resistance must be energized and prepared to play the long game, which is something most Americans on the right are not very good at doing. So refusing to wear a mask in the grocery store or in someone else's restaurant is not a risk. Okay, if you really want to put your money where your mouth is, he says instead refuse to wear it at your place of employment or at a hospital or some other place that's actually willing to enforce the mandate. See what price you are willing to pay for your freedom all by yourself. See whether it is punishment, financial sacrifice, or even worse. See if the risks are serious in a genuine resistance movement, because he says those risks have to be shared. Now, case in point, he says, my son last week was admitted to the burn unit of a local hospital for a very rare and dangerous allergic reaction to a prescription drug, Stevens-Johnson syndrome. He says, check out the images if you want a real scare. Throwing a mask on was the last thing I ever thought about. Get it? But he says, until we have the level of organized resistance that I've described, we should stop pointing the finger at each other. That's a terrible waste of energy, and it plays directly into the hands of those we intend to resist. After all, dividing us is exactly the strategy used by the government and the left to get what they want. And by the way, his son is home safe and sound. He says, thanks to the doctors, nurses, medical staff, and all those who prayed, lit candles, and cooked meals. So I think Matt Rowe has something worth considering here. And I'm not suggesting, well, if you're not being tarred and feathered, you're just not being effective. But it does kind of raise the question of, if you're sitting on your biscuit, never wanting to risk it, to quote Daryl from The Office, are you really accomplishing anything? You know, there's times I actually feel, I don't know what it would be, survivor's guilt or something, that I'm not enduring more persecution or more pain than I currently am. And I get some pretty good pushback, and there's times where I feel like, oh man, I'm risking something here. But I'll also acknowledge, I feel like I am not being asked a whole lot right now. Not compared to people whose very livelihoods are on the line and who are really, suffering in order to stand up for what they believe. And this is particularly true, the people who, reach the point where they just decide, we can't take it here anymore. We're going to have to relocate. As I mentioned on yesterday's show, that is so much harder than it appears. There's so much more involved in uprooting your family and moving somewhere. I know of whence I speak, because it's something I've done in the last year. And it's, as discouraging as a lot of the COVID-19 stuff has been, as discouraging as the lockdowns and masks and just some of the general fear of the unknown has been, I can honestly say that the act of trying to gather my possessions and move them from one place to another, actually there's like several small moves spread out over the course of about a month and a half. It was awful. It's one of the very few times in my life where I actually was just like, you know what, God, if you want to call me home, if you want to, give me a massive heart attack and bring me home right now, I'd be okay with that because moving sucks that bad. Yeah, I know it sounds overly dramatic, but it really was a miserable experience. And yet, it was absolutely the right thing to do. I'm better for having gone through it, but I'm not going to pretend like it was fun. And I think that's kind of how we have to approach that need to make a stand. It ain't going to be fun, but it's necessary.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. If you'd like to subscribe to my show notes, just simply go to thebrianhydeshow.com, click on the show notes, pick a day, any day. Down at the bottom of the page, you will see a subscribe button. All it requires is your email, which I will not give or trade or sell to anybody for any reason. It's just there so I can safely guide my daily show notes into your inbox on a regular basis. And hopefully you'll find some very useful information there. Got a great article here that I've been waiting to share. And, you know, while so much of our attention's been focused, rightly focused, on the COVID power grabs, there's also an economic threat that has been growing by the minute. Brandon Smith is one of those writers who has earned my respect, and I think he is a very credible source of information. So I wanted to share his lowdown on how the Fed has triggered a stagnationary disaster that will hit hard this year. And I'm sharing this in the hopes that you and I are not blindsided. Now, this was originally published at Birch Gold Group, so you'll notice toward the end of the article there is kind of a pitch there for precious metals. But I want you to hear what Brandon Smith has to say about the prospect of stagflationary disaster that is looming. He says, I don't think I can overstate the danger that the U.S. economy is in right now as we enter 2022. While most people are caught up in the ongoing drama of COVID-19, a real threat looms over the nation in the form of a stagflationary tidal wave. The mainstream media is attempting to place the blame on supply chain disruptions, but he says that's a misrepresentation of the issue. The two factors are indeed intertwined, but the reality is that inflation is the cause of supply chain disruptions, not the result of supply chain disruptions. So if we look at the underlying stats for price rises in essential products, we can get a clearer picture. Now, Brandon Smith says, before I get into my argument, I really want to stress that this is a precarious time, and I suggest that people prepare accordingly. He says, in just the past few months, I've seen my personal expenses rise at least 20% overall, and I'm sure it's the same or worse for most of you. Stocking necessities and safe haven investments with intrinsic value like physical precious metals are a good choice for protecting whatever buying power your dollars have left. So let's start with higher prices everywhere. Brandon Smith says the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, is officially at the highest levels in 40 years. CPI measurements often diminish the scale of the problem because they do not include things like food, energy, and housing, which are core expenses for the public. CPI calculations have also been adjusted over the past few decades by the government to express a more positive view on inflation. So if we look at the inflation numbers at Shadow Stats, calculated according to the same methods they used in the 1980s, we see a dramatic increase in CPI, which paints a more dire but also a more accurate picture. So here's some of the unpleasant truth. You might want to grab a chair in case your knees get weak on you here. U.S. food prices have spiked to levels not seen since 2008 at the onset of the credit and derivatives collapse that brought about tens of trillion dollars in Federal Reserve bailouts. Now, if we look beyond the 2008 crisis, food costs do not see a similar jump until the 1980s. Rising food prices in the U.S. are often obscured by creative accounting and shrinkflation, shrinking packages but rising prices. But if we look at global food prices, the average is a 30% jump in the past year. Rental and home prices have also gone into the stratosphere. Rental costs went up around 18% in 2021. And this is an extension of a trend that's been prevalent for the past decade. Prices have been rising for a while. It's just that now the avalanche has accelerated. Home prices are currently out of the range of most new potential home buyers. Values jumped 16% in the past year alone, with the average property costing $408,000. Home sales continue to remain elevated compared to 2 years ago, despite inflating prices, for one reason and one reason only, and that is the mass migration of Americans away from the draconian mandates and bureaucracy of blue states into more conservative states. So, for instance, Brandon Smith says, I live in Montana, a primary destination for people relocating, and from my experience, he says the majority of these people are conservatives, seeking to escape the vaccine and lockdown mandates in places like California, New York, and Illinois. They see the writing on the wall, and they're trying to get ahead of the economic and social calamity that will surely befall such states. Now, he says, I would also note that home sales have finally begun to flatten in the past 6 months, but prices are not dropping, which is a trend that needs to be explored further because it illustrates the larger issue of stagflation. So he says, understand, prices aren't just rising because of increased demand. Demand is actually starting to fall in many sectors. Prices are rising because of increased money supply and dollar devaluation, which is not yet being reflected in the dollar index. So take a look at U.S. GDP. You'll see for the past several years, it has tracked in tandem with price inflation. So obviously, if prices inflate, then this means people are spending more, which then leads to higher U.S. GDP. It's like magic, right? In other words, inflation makes it always seem as though the U.S. GDP is always improving. But this hasn't been the case in the past couple of years. Official GDP has flattened, despite the fact that the U.S. money supply and inflation have rocketed higher. What does that mean? Well, he says, I believe it's a sign of stagflation and a reckoning in 2022. If we examine inflation-adjusted GDP numbers from Shadow Stats, we can see that gross domestic product has declined rather aggressively in the past couple of years. And he says, we can also see odd tendencies in oil and gasoline prices. Now, while it's true, gas prices have been higher in the past, this does not address the full context of the situation. U.S. travel spending has declined 12% since 2019. And airline travel has dropped at least 21% in the past year. Average gasoline usage dropped after 2019 and still has not recovered. Yet gas prices continue to rise. In other words, travel demand is stagnant, but the prices are increasing. And this is another signal of inflationary pressures and dollar devaluation. See, oil is priced in dollars globally, and therefore any inflation in the dollar will be readily visible in oil. This would explain why pandemic paranoia and reduced travel have not caused gas prices to drop. Now, if the current momentum continues, the majority of necessities in the U.S. will not be affordable for most people by next year. Did you hear what I just said? If the current momentum continues, the majority of necessities in the U.S. will not be affordable for most people by next year. This is why I think food storage makes such sense. Brandon Smith says, we're looking at a fast-moving decline in production along with a swift explosion in prices. In other words, a stagflationary disaster. So why is this happening? Well, he says this is the Federal Reserve's fault. Brandon Smith says, I and many other alternative economists have been warning about the inevitable inflation, stagflation crisis for years, but the most important factor to understand is who is responsible for this event. And he says the mainstream financial media is going to protect the government and the Federal Reserve at all costs during this breakdown. They're going to blame COVID, the lockdowns here and overseas, as well as the supply chain bottleneck. But Brandon Smith says the Fed is the true culprit, though. And while there have been many American presidents and other politicians that have supported the Fed in its inflationary activities, the central bank itself needs to be held accountable for the downturn that is about to occur. This is a process that started back at the founding of the Fed, but spread like cancer after the crash of 2008 and the introduction of 12-plus years of stimulus and bailout measures, along with near-zero interest rates. So the pandemic is the perfect cover for the inflationary endgame. Brandon Smith says in 2008, the response to the crisis was to print and pump dollars into banks and corporations in the U.S. and around the globe. This money supply was held in corporate coffers and in central banks overseas, which slowed the effects of inflation. This set the precedent for subversive stimulus policies by giving the Fed a blank check to do whatever it wanted. In 2020, the Fed created trillions more, but this time money was injected directly into the U.S. economy through COVID stimulus checks, PPP loans, and other measures. In the alternative economic field, we call this helicopter money. These dollars triggered a massive retail buying spree in 2020, but more dollars in the economy chasing less goods, prices are now spiking much higher. So the big discussion today is whether or not the Fed will taper their asset purchases, reduce their balance sheet, and raise interest rates to counter inflation. That's what people are wondering. But he says the fact is it won't matter. Inflation / stagflation will continue or even accelerate as the Fed tapers. We're going to come back to his article in just a few moments. I have a link in the show notes if you want to check this out yourself. Lots of links contained therein. Some of these terms may be unfamiliar. Work through it. Make yourself understand what's being said here and prepare accordingly.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Got to send some love out there for sewingandquiltingcenter.com. They are located in St. George, Utah, a family-owned business. That would be Teresa and Eric Alsop. And, yep, if you are into sewing or you know somebody who's into sewing or long-arm quilting or embroidery, they have exactly what you're looking for. They've got the machines. They can service those machines. They can teach you how to use those machines to the best effect. They can also get you set up with thread, with fabric, all the things you require. It's all in one place. And they do some fantastic customer service as well. All you got to do is contact them. I would start by going to the website at sewingquiltingcenter.com or sewingandquiltingcenter.com. And when you talk to them, tell them thanks for being a sponsor of this program. So I'm sharing this article from Brandon Smith, who normally is published on alt-market.us. The Fed has triggered a stagflationary disaster that will hit hard this year. And again, I want to reiterate, I'm really not trying to scare you. I don't want to induce panic. But I don't want to deny that shadow that is approaching and what it means. We're all going to have to prepare as best we can. I don't think there's any perfect way to avoid the pain. But there are things you can do to shore up your situation that aren't going to leave you or your family wondering, what are we going to do for food? What are we going to do for heat? What are we going to do, you know, to take care of ourselves? It's interesting. In the last segment, I pointed out, Brandon says the big discussion today is whether or not the Fed will taper their asset purchases, reduce their balance sheet, and raise interest rates to counter inflation. What happens when they raise interest rates is that contracts the availability of credit. Now, a lot of businesses have lines of credit on which they run. And when it's not easy to go apply for money and to get money, well, guess what? For some of those businesses, it means they're going to have to close. Guess who wins? Guess who gets the collateral? Yeah, the same people making them the loan. The bankers can't lose. But Brandon says, look, the fact is it doesn't matter whether the Fed does these things. Inflation, stagflation will continue or accelerate even as the Fed tapers. With a taper comes the threat of a flattening yield curve in Treasury bonds, as well as the danger of bonds and dollars being dumped by foreign investors and central banks. Now, if trillions upon trillions of dollars being held overseas come flooding back into the U.S., inflation is going to continue at its current pace or possibly erupt even higher. In fact, the world's ownership of dollars reached a 26-year low recently. What that means is the global transition is away from the dollar toward inflation-resistant investments. It's already starting. And this is not a policy error. He says, I explained this Catch-22 threat in my recent article. The Fed's Catch-22 taper is a weapon, not a policy error. And he says, in that essay, I outline the Fed's documented history of creating economic disasters that conveniently end up benefiting their friends in the international banks. And why wouldn't it? They're a cartel. He says, I also explained with evidence how the Federal Reserve actually takes its marching orders for the bank or from the Bank for International Settlements, which is a globalist institution along with the International Monetary Fund and World Economic Forum, is openly seeking a one-world economic system and one-world currency system. He says, I don't believe the Fed's actions are a product of ignorance or stupidity or basic greed. I do not believe the Fed is scrambling to keep the U.S. economy afloat. He says, I believe, according to the evidence, that the Fed knows exactly what it is doing. The pandemic offers a perfect scapegoat for an engineered crash of the U.S. economy, which the Fed is trying to facilitate. Why? Well, because the more desperate people are financially, the easier they are to buy off with false promises and a loaf of bread. They're easier to control. And on top of that, with the U.S. economy reduced to second or third world status, it's a lot easier to sell the public on the predetermined solution, total global centralization and far less freedom. A great reset, you might say. Wink, wink. As the stagflationary crash plays out, he says, never forget who really was the cause of the public suffering. In the fog of national crisis, it's easy for the establishment to shift blame and responsibility and to cloud the truth. But he says the inflation calamity is about to get much worse, and as it does, we need to rally newly awakened people to take action against the central bankers and globalists behind it. Interestingly enough, I see where Dan Bongino is actually launching something called Parallel Economy. And this is in response to the not just the deplatforming that we see on, you know, social media, but the actual deplatforming by banks. Mike Lindell, the owner of MyPillow.com, he apparently has been told he's got 30 days to take all of his banking and move it somewhere else because the banks that he's been working with will no longer work with him. He's too subversive. He's too scary. He's too, you know, off that 3x5 index card of approved opinion. So I applaud Dan Bongino for what he's doing here. I think it's very admirable. Will it be the solution? I don't know. I don't think we need just one solution. I think we need a lot of solutions. I think we need a number of different parallels being built so that if one gets parlored, so to speak, there will be others to take its place. I know it feels like we're up against this insurmountable foe that has basically all the resources of the world at its disposal. And in some ways, that feels like the case. It feels like, yeah, man, they've got all the cards stacked in their favor. And they've had a very long time to get that system in order. But I want to remind you that the power of no is still very real. No is still the most powerful word in any language. And without your consent, their plans are not going to come to fruition. Now, you're seeing that there are a lot of different ways we can make your life miserable. I mean, come on, the vaccine mandates have been proof of this. We're just going to take away everything that you find valuable. If you want to go out to eat, nope, you can't do that. Well, what if I want to go watch a ball game? Nope, can't do that. A show? Nope. Can I go here? Nope. You have to do what we say. Now, remember, you're free to choose. You're free to consent. But until you consent, we're just going to take away everything we can. I don't know that I've ever seen a more blatant power play to try to bring people to heel. And I know it sounds very uppity, you know, to say, but I'm not going to do it. But I'll take that label. I'll take whatever other labels you want to throw at me. Look, I'm not trying to flex here. But I can tell you, in all honesty, I have spent the better part of my life, at least for the last 30 years, I have spent a great deal of time and effort learning what my rights are and where they originate. I understand the principles and practices of freedom. Not perfectly. I'm still learning, mind you. But I've put in the hard work of understanding this enough that I feel very confident in knowing where to draw the line and say, that's not going to fly. That's not going to work with me. I will not consent. Now, to some people, that's like, wow, that makes you almost a terrorist. That means you must be some violent, out-of-control individual who's just, you know, going to live, you know, according to your own life and damn everybody else. But that's not how I feel at all. I am going to make my own decision. I am going to live as freely as possible. And you know what? It's impossible to live perfectly freely. You can't. There's no place on earth you can go where you are going to be able to live free of some kind of, you know, government coercion. But I think first and foremost, that freedom starts as a state of mind. And simply by having the mindset that I ultimately get to say whether or not I will consent, that takes the wind out of the sails of a lot of those people with controlling natures. The people who get really offended if you don't come to them and ask permission and pay a small fee for a license, you know, to do what you want to do. See, that's their problem, not mine. I know the difference between right and wrong. I'm very grateful for parents who raised me to understand that difference. I'm grateful for mentors who also helped me to further refine what it means to be a decent human being, and I work on it every day. I also stumble and fall a lot, which the people around me will recognize as, yeah, he does. But you have the same power to make those decisions. And it doesn't mean that we see ourselves as better or somehow elevated over everybody else. It simply means we understand our rights, we're willing to stand up and assert them. And with God's help, I'm convinced each of us can make the difference that we were born to make. So my invitation is, rise to that challenge. Be who you were born to be.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.